The Monologue.
This is the exact kind of story that just kills me and reminds me that I am, in fact, a emotional person. It killed me the first time we talked about it. John Craig Hickey was walking his dog, Alice, 14-year-old Alice, in Pioneer Square just a few weeks ago. And he was walking by City Hall Park. This was when City Hall Park was not yet cleared of the dangerous encampment, the one that we have been talking about for about a year now. People have been sounding alarms for about a year now as well. And as he was walking by, it ended up changing his life forever. Because according to police, a guy named Courtney Williams first tried to rob John Hickey. Tried to take his coat. But he wasn't going to be a victim that day. He decided to defend himself. He pulled out, I believe it was pepper spray. He used it to defend himself. The guy, Courtney Williams, goes away according to the court documents. But then soon he comes back. He wanted to enact his revenge. And he kicked Alice the dog so hard that she died of a hemorrhage. And she bled out right there on the streets. She died next to her owner, John Hickey.
I mean, there's days when I'll go home and I feel like I've got to take her out to walk her, or I've got to feed her, or I think I can hear her. But she's not there.
You feel for him because you know how much he loved Alice. This is someone like so many of you who are dog and cat owners. He was truly attached to a member of his family who was killed right in front of him. Q13 says Courtney Williams could be sentenced any day now. However, despite, by the way, him not showing up to a court date, skipping out, the most he could get for this particular crime is 1 year. And even more annoying is that of that 1 year, he almost certainly won't spend all or even any of that time behind bars.
Whatever happens is not going to be satisfying, but it's really at this point nobody's fault. It's what the laws are. And the only thing that we can do is to change the laws.
So that's what he's trying to do. And Q13, whom he spoke to there, is noting that in Washington state, if someone's convicted of first-degree animal cruelty, in a case where one could have tortured and or killed an animal, the maximum time they face in jail is 12 months. But prosecutors say most people end up serving less than that. Some don't serve any time at all. They're just released into some community service. But as the law stands right now, a judge can say, I'm going to give you 0 months in jail or 12 months. Kristen Gregory is the director of animal cruelty investigations over at Posado Safe Haven. And she pointed out most people convicted just convince the judge to give them community service. Oh, yeah, I'll go into the community. I'll clean some trash in a park somewhere. And so people like Hickey, the victim here, wants to create something called Alice's Law, which would enforce stricter penalties on cases of animal cruelty. Now, what that looks like, I don't know. But I do know that in a case like this, something so despicable and egregious, 1 year, not even a guaranteed 1 year, is concerning. Do you want someone who's capable of doing something like this out on the streets? I know because he comes from the homeless encampment, we're supposed to pretend that he's somehow the victim here. He is not the victim. He first tried to rob this man, and then he killed his dog. He deserves well more than 1 year in jail, but we know because we live in King County and in Seattle where these judges are making these decisions, they almost see no punishment whatsoever. We're lucky to get even the bare minimum of punishment. Now, I'm hoping that in this case, this guy goes to jail for at least the year. Maybe gets the help that he needs inside of a prison cell. But we have to do a lot better to change some of these sentencing requirements so that we take a lot of that control out of the hands of partisan judges.
The interview.
Zero. That is the number of religious accommodations that have been offered to Washington State Trooper or Patrol staff members. Most of them are commissioned, but also non-commissioned, according to the latest data coming from Governor Jay Inslee. They can get out of the mandate with a religious exemption and accommodation. And it would appear that the policy, even though they say it's not a policy, says yes to exemption, no to accommodation, which is a distinction without a difference. Joining me on the line is State Senator Doug Erickson from Ferndale to respond. Doug, welcome back to the show. Does this surprise you?
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't surprise me. What did surprise me a little bit was the immature response out of the governor's office to the story you originally ran.
Yes, that it was fake.
I mean, yeah, that they would actually, you know, behave in such a fashion as that. But it's not surprising. It's frustrating. It's infuriating to the good people at the State Patrol and other places that would like to be able to exercise an exemption. And so they're just very, very upset and frustrated.
And it's not just the Washington State Patrol. This is happening across the board for state departments. I can tell you right now, the latest number that's been released is 7. That's the total number out of several thousand people asking for religious exemptions and accommodations. Only 7 were offered up. That very clearly suggests that this is coordinated, or it's coming from some kind of guidance saying it's okay to do this.
Well, it seems that Jay Inslee has higher standards than St. Peter at the pearly gates, right?
So, no kidding. So what could be done?
Because
last legislative session, you were trying very hard to make sure that this couldn't happen.
Yeah, I introduced legislation last year to say, hey, let's not discriminate against people based upon their choice they make personally for their personal health care. And I ran legislation. Of course, the Democrats said no. So it's still in play. We could have a special session next week and bring up my piece of legislation and pass it if Senate and House Democrats say, you know, want to give people some freedom of choice with regards to their health care decisions. So we could do that. But right now, I think the best course of action is going to be the legal efforts that are coming from the State Patrol, mm-hmm. coming from firefighters, coming from state employees all around Washington. And I'm not sure what the most recent count is, but I think there's up to 1,000 signatories, you know, on the lawsuit against Governor Inslee for not allowing these exemptions.
Short of the legal route, which I'm hopeful for to a degree, but also realizing we are in Washington State and our judges have a tendency to side very heavily with Democrats, do you get the sense that there are growing concerns coming from the Democratic Party? I mean, we had Mark Mullett on the show this week. He wants a special legislative session. He's more of a moderate Democrat. Do you think that there will be any kind of movement here?
Yeah, I hope so, because I think one of the great myths out there that's being put forward by certain groups is that the freedom when it comes to making these healthcare choices is a Republican issue. And I can tell you straight out, it's not a Republican issue. I mean, I'm hearing from Libertarians, from Democrats, from Independents, from Green Party members, you know, all throughout Washington State, who believe that the individual person should have a choice in this. So I'm hopeful the Democrats are hearing and they're listening to what's going on out there, but it's definitely not a Republican issue. It's not a MAGA issue. It's not a red hat wearing people issue. It crosses all party lines.
Yesterday, King County announced that they're doing vaccine passports for non-essential businesses. The governor last week indicated that this was something that's being considered. He hasn't made up his mind yet. It seems like we're going in that direction across the state. It obviously hasn't hit Whatcom County yet, but if the governor does impose something, obviously it will. Number one, do you think that that's a reality? And number two, what, again, do you think your response would be out in Whatcom County? What do you think the people would say?
Well, I think it is a reality. Jay Inslee has shown that he is greatly enjoying the emergency powers granted to him by the legislature, by the way, last January when the Democrats in the House and the Senate expanded his power.
Yep.
So I don't think it would be well received throughout Washington State if he does go down this route. And I don't think the science is that much different in Washington compared to Florida or Texas, where they're going the opposite way of saying no to vaccine mandates.
Yeah, the science, as it turns out, hasn't actually changed. The people pretending to care about the science, those are the ones who have changed. We've been talking with State Senator Doug Erickson. He, of course, is our friend from Ferndale, Republican in the State Senate. Thank you so much for stopping by. As always, really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on, and thanks for fighting the good fight.
Absolutely. You as well. Now this.
The monologue.
Whenever it comes to stories concerning the police, especially in certain parts of this country, you end up getting a lot of bad faith actors pretending that they understand an issue, but then really taking an opportunity to swipe at cops. And that's what's happening in the state of Minnesota. Their Department of Public Safety ended up getting some significant pushback because they posted some photos on their Facebook and Twitter accounts of something that they call not reaching pouches. And so they're what it sounds like. It's a pouch that you would keep in your car and you would put it in a place that is easily identifiable, like an officer who's pulling you over can see it. And inside of it, you hold certain items, your driver's license, your insurance card, and your car's registration. Because one part of policing that can be incredibly dangerous is when someone who is acting in bad faith, who is a criminal, who realizes that an officer might find out that they have a warrant out for their arrest or something, they end up reaching into a glove compartment, pulling out a weapon, and then hurting the officer or killing that officer. It is a very tense situation when you pull someone over. All officers will tell you that. It's made especially worse at night when it's more difficult to see. It's made even more tense when there are multiple people in a car. And so they decided over at the Minnesota Department of Public Safety to put out this product, to put out this sort of a PSA, I would say, to help cut down on any uses of force. They said the purpose of the pouches were, quote, to help reduce deadly force encounters between law enforcement and citizens during traffic stops by making it easier for law enforcement to see when motorists are reaching for documents. Now, when I was younger, I had a conversation with an officer who told me the proper way to handle any of these stops, and he told me it specifically from the perspective of an officer who doesn't want to get injured. You're always supposed to keep your hands in clear view. You put them on the steering wheel. Before you go and grab some document that an officer asks you for, you say, "Officer, can I get it from my glove compartment? Or can I reach into my pocket to pull out my wallet?" You're supposed to do that, and that puts them less on edge. But instead of understanding where this came from, instead of understanding the context, you had a whole bunch of people responding on Twitter talking about how, oh, you should just learn how about not shooting people? How about just choosing not to kill people? It is so ridiculous. It is absolutely absurd what some of these lunatics who are acting in bad faith are doing. Some guy named Bill Corbett, he's just some podcaster, but he's got a blue check mark, and he's got a lot of followers. He responded, "Possibly simpler idea. You could stop being trigger-happy psychos." Bill Corbett is a lunatic and a shameful person, and he is part of the reason why cops have to put out messages like this and products like this. Because there is this false position, this false narrative, that cops are, in fact, trigger-happy. No, they're not. They would prefer to never have to use a handgun or any weapon or any force during their entire careers. They would prefer never having to do that. They don't want to hurt anyone. They don't want to kill people, including people who are bad guys, because that weighs on them, even when they know that what they did was right. But they have bad faith folks like Bill Corbett, some lunatic you've never even heard of, putting out this kind of nonsense that makes it so that people are terrified of cops. You have other people like Tara Haley is her name. She's a science and health journalist who has BLM in her profile. And by journalist, I think she just means she writes on Medium. She said, "This is like telling women not to wear short skirts so they can avoid being raped. The problem isn't motorists reaching for a license, insurance, and registration. The problem is cops shooting people." People like this know what they're doing. They know what they're doing, and their intent is very clear. And it's a shame because you have people who are trying to do the right thing, who are trying to keep everyone safe. And those folks in law enforcement over in Minnesota were trying to do that. Instead, they got treated like what they were doing was somehow wrong or controversial. It's not. The stupid hot takes by degenerates is what's wrong.
The interview.
Well, Yakima County became the first county in Washington State to ban a county income tax. Obviously, there is growing resistance to what seems to be an inevitability in the Washington State area. Just, we're going to see more taxes. What that looks like depends really on the willingness of folks to push back. Joining me on the line from Yakima County, she is the Yakima County Commissioner for the first position, Amanda McKinney. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
What prompted this vote?
You know, we really wanted to lend our voices to our legislators. You know, we've got in Washington a minority Republican legislature, but I think this is something that we can all get behind, is wanting to lend our voices to this isn't inevitable. You know, we've got decades worth of votes to show that people do not want an income tax in Washington State. And we wanted to be able to, number one, provide protection for our local community, and two, allow our state legislative representatives to be able to point to all these municipalities mm-hmm. that are standing up and saying, no, we do not want this. And not only did we not want it decades ago, but at this moment in time, we do not want this.
Well, and the symbolism of this, I think, is really, really important. But at the same time, you know, the reality check is, you point out, there are lots of votes that have already taken place where the people have said no, no, no. And yet the legislature is ignoring all of that and doing it anyway. So why do you think the symbolism here will all of a sudden connect with the folks in Olympia?
I think the symbolism is something that you recognize that you are going to always have to push back. And as long as we have a legislative majority in the state who is going to push policies like this, we are going to have to stand up and say no. And this is going to be a likelihood we're going to be doing this for decades to come. But just because they're continuing to push for it doesn't mean that we shouldn't continue to stand up and say no. So the people who come after me, I hope that they had the same passion, that they're going to want to stand up and say no repeatedly, over and over again. We do not want this.
Yeah,
that's probably what it's going to take.
I certainly hope that it inspires that kind of activism, and I know that all of this inspires more votes all across. I don't know if you'll get a King County, for example, but hey, maybe you get a Snohomish County, maybe you get a Pierce County. Some of the Spokane obviously is very interested in pursuing the same sort of symbolism here. Does your vote have any teeth to it from a county level, or is this purely symbolic?
You know, I would say, of course, you know, let the attorney tack that out, because that's always what it's going to be, what it'll come down to.
Yeah.
But what I will say is symbolism. You know, even a commissioner's board beyond the one that's right now, because, of course, we're always evolving, the next commissioner's board could pass a resolution taking away this one and negating it. However, we wanted to set that example and say, listen, if you're going to come back and try to tax us, it's going to be, you're going to have to provide that extra level of convincing to the rest of the public, the voting public, that you felt it was so compelling that you wanted to add this tax, that you wanted to reverse a previous decision that said we do not want this. So in the absence of saying we don't want it, I thought, you know, it's probably easier for someone to enact it. But now that bar is raised. Not only do we have to say, you have to reach that level of threshold of convincing people this is a good thing, but you have to convince them to the point where you have to overcome that level of, well, we didn't want it before, so tell me why all of a sudden this is a great idea.
Where do you think the disconnect is between a lot of voters who will say no to this, but then put in place politicians repeatedly who just say, yeah, we don't care what you think?
Cause and effect. I think that really we have to do a better job of really sitting down and talking with folks and letting them know what happens? What's the cause and the effect of a vote? And when you vote for someone who's voting for these policies, these are what they're actually doing. And I don't know that we do a good enough job of being able to highlight, and I'll use police reform as a great example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come in and they talk about these things and it's supposed to be for a brighter, better future. And yet you can turn any law enforcement officer nonpartisan and they will tell you that those things are impacting their ability to provide public service, to provide that public safety aspect. And that is something that everyone wants to see in all of our neighborhoods. So we have to tie it together. We have to show, look at cause and effect. If you want to have a safer community, we're here to provide opportunities for you to do that, and we want to do it in the same way that's going to provide tools that law enforcement are asking for us to provide to them. They want to provide that public safety, and they want to also do it in a way that's respectful to every member of the community. That's their charge, so let's support them in that. Republicans have those ideas.
Yeah, well, stay strong in Yakima County. I know that while things aren't nearly as bad as some other places with some of the activists, you guys have to deal with some of them yourself. So make sure you're staying strong. Know that we support you 100%. We've been talking with Yakima County Commissioner Amanda McKinney. Amanda, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks for highlighting this.
Absolutely. Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Always glad to see Seattle radio host Jason Rantz.
It's always a pleasure to watch you and a pleasure now to host you.
Jason, I just love your coverage of what's been going on in Seattle.
Jason, this is as bad as it gets in America.
Jason Rantz, great to see you. Thank you.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Every day that goes by is another day closer to the vaccine mandate for not just state workers and school staff in the state of Washington, but thanks to Governor Jay Inslee's mandate, it also impacts people who work at hospitals, who work in healthcare. And folks don't necessarily want to take the vaccine who work in healthcare. And of all the people who understand a little bit more than maybe we do as to the effects of the vaccine, or maybe really it just not being any of your business, are the ones who work treating us if we were to get COVID. People are being put in really tough positions. Jamie Cameron is one of them. She's an ER nurse over at MultiCare Good Samaritan in Puyallup. She doesn't want to participate in this particular mandate, and now she's going to lose her job. Her husband also might lose his job as well. She joins me now. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you, Jason. So just really quickly, I have not lost my job yet, because I did report this to the Medical Ethics Committee and to my manager, who, talked me into submitting an exemption, because they really want me to stay, because I am a great nurse. So we will see if that goes through. I have yet to hear. However, my initial, reaction to the mandate of this vaccine, being that we live in the United States, was to, resign and, go elsewhere. That was my original reaction, because I'm not, my natural reaction is to flee and not to fight. I'm not a natural born fighter. I don't like conflict. So, but now that this has been, and since we live in the United States, I was just like, well, that's why the states were formed, right? To, protect us from, government overreach. So that being said, when Biden announced his, that this was going to be federally mandated, obviously that ignited my, the little bit of fight that I have mm-hmm. in me. And that's why I'm choosing to speak out now, because I realize that this is, I feel I need to stand up for basic patient rights, which are the right to refuse, the right to informed consent, and just the integrity of science in a whole, being that the foundation for determining the success of any scientific experiment is the control group. So, and I feel like those three things right now are in jeopardy.
Yeah. Well, so where do you stand then, just personally, as far as you're not wanting to, and I phrase it in this way, not wanting to participate in this mandate? I have no idea whether or not you are vaccinated or want to get vaccinated. I don't know if this is about, the government overreach aspect, which is where I personally stand as someone who is vaccinated. I'm against the mandate. So take us through where your thinking is.
So I don't believe that the government has any grounds to mandate this, because the public health benefit has yet to be determined, because it's not preventing reinfection. It's not preventing transmission, as evidenced by the daily case numbers that we're seeing, I think it's 70% of the population is now vaccinated. We're seeing those case numbers increase, which would actually say maybe that it has been counterproductive, in reducing transmission. So the public health benefit of this is yet to be determined, really. It's inconclusive at best. And then, many of my colleagues are, making the argument that, the vaccine reduces, hospitalization rates and, severity of the disease. Well, there's also data coming out now, recently from the CDC that also refutes this statement. There was like a recent, one article is, there was a 469 cases of COVID-19 in, Barnstable County, Massachusetts. So 69% of the population there is vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
74% of the case outbreak occurred in vaccinated persons. Okay. Five of those patients ended up getting hospitalized. Of all of the patients who were infected, four of them were vaccinated. the one that wasn't vaccinated had previous underlying medical conditions. The four who were not, two of them had underlying medical conditions, and two were perfectly healthy. So I just feel like the public health benefit of this has yet to be proven. So that's where really my, I guess, stance lies is, okay. You know, we can't require people to take things with potentially harmful effects that don't offer any public health benefit. And that's where, you know, the government has been able to mandate vaccines in the past is that they offer a proven, you know, public health benefit. And this vaccine has yet to prove that.
Jamie Cameron is an ER nurse over at MultiCare Good Samaritan in Puyallup. She might lose her job if she's not accommodated with the vaccine mandate. And all the data seems to suggest that you won't, in fact, be accommodated. It's a little bit different when we're talking about hospitals. It's been a little bit of a mixed bag as far as some of the results we know on the state side. They're definitely not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do know a lot of people who have been, their religious exemptions have been refused and their rights have not been protected and they have lost their jobs. So that is happening.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, you know, that it isn't happening. It definitely is happening.
Well, you don't want it to happen.
I know nurses personally.
You don't want to lose your job.
No, I don't want to lose my job. Yes, it's 100% a true statement when I say I do not want to lose my job. I could lose my job. I could lose my job for speaking to you right now. I don't know. You know, it's just that's the chance that I'm willing to take because I feel like it is, you know, my duty as a nurse to, you know, speak on behalf of everybody who's affected by this. All of those people are now, you know, what I would say patients who are being required to receive medical care because I'm not just speaking on behalf of myself. I'm speaking on behalf of everybody who is affected by this. I just think that, you know, there are side effects that we're seeing in the hospital from these vaccines that nobody is talking about. And it's disturbing, to be honest.
What are you seeing in the hospitals right now? We're told that they're being overrun with COVID patients and, you know, any of the staffing issues that we know hospitals are dealing with have been completely ignored.
Well, we do have, you know, our COVID cases, but we have a lot of that. I think one thing that people fail to mention is that hospitals have been overrun for some time now. I've been an ER nurse for 4 years and I've had to hold, you know, patients in the ER who are ICU level for all of my ER career that I can remember. I mean, this is not a new issue that we're facing. We've been facing this for many years now. And so the fact that, you know, hospital capacity is something that they're saying, you know, it's not any worse than what it's been in the past.
Well, the argument coming from folks is that COVID is preventable, and by not getting vaccinated, they are putting an undue burden on the hospital. So what's your response to that?
Well, I would say that, you know, a vaccinated person can transmit the virus. They can contract the virus, and they can transmit the virus just as an unvaccinated person can. So I don't understand their argument when they say, well, getting vaccinated, you know, relieves the burden because, I will say that in some areas, there are more unvaccinated patients with severe illness, mm-hmm. you know, in the hospitals. However, you look in other parts of the world, the opposite is happening. So it depends on where you look and it depends on what variant is circulating through a community as to, you know, how effective this vaccine is. And I think we're just failing to look at the bigger picture, you know, where, you know, I think this vaccine is effective for some variants, but for some variants it is not. It is not. It has not been proven to reduce transmission as evidenced by the extreme amount of cases that we're seeing.
Well, we purposely talk to folks like you who actually work in the healthcare system, not necessarily because I agree with your analysis on everything, but because I think it's one of those conversations that isn't taking place. The only time we hear from nurses on TV or in print or on the radio is when they're saying, oh, just get the shot, get the shot, get the shot. We're overrun. We're turning people away. And the data just doesn't usually back that up. Maybe in certain circumstances on like a micro level it does, but certainly on the macro level, it's not pointing to that. Jamie Cameron, again, ER nurse from MultiCare Good Samaritan in Puyallup. Thank you so much for stopping by and giving us your perspective. I think it's important to hear all sides of this.
Okay, thank you so much.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Now this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Jason Rants, Seattle radio host, joins us now.
Jason, you're the perfect guest on this.
Jason Rants, welcome back, Jason.
I see you often on other programs here.
Jason, what's going on?
Jason, thanks for coming on.
The Quick Hit.
Hasn't really been a lot of attention paid to a federal judge's ruling yesterday, despite all of the coverage coming from CNN and MSNBC and all the others over the Texas abortion law. As you will recall, the abortion law in Texas got in front of the Supreme Court, and they said, we're not going to get involved. It basically says that a private citizen, not a governmental agency, but a private citizen can go ahead and sue an abortion provider, as well as anyone who aids and abets that abortion, though not the woman going through with an abortion, in the state of Texas. Now, it is, I think it's going to be deemed unconstitutional, but the DOJ decided to get involved. They decided to sue the state of Texas over this abortion ban. And the way that it was written was specifically to make this kind of challenge difficult, more difficult. And it got a lot of coverage. All of the lawsuit portions of this, DOJ gets involved, Biden to the rescue, Supreme Court, shame on you for not getting involved. All of that got a lot of coverage. And yet, a decision yesterday by a federal judge to deny the DOJ's motion to halt the abortion law wasn't getting much coverage at all. In fact, other than over at Fox News and I think Newsweek, other than them, I haven't really seen any significant coverage. Now, I imagine locally in Texas, they covered it. And maybe it got a sentence or two coverage on a CNN article or in a newscast. But no one really is talking about this, which seems kind of a significant move. Now, ultimately, this could mean nothing, right? Because, again, I do ultimately think that this law is going to be tossed. And there is going to be a hearing on October 1st. But they're not going to schedule anything sooner, which means the abortion law is still in effect and will continue to be in effect until at least October 1st. Now, the DOJ tried to get it to be stalled, and the judge said no. The judge is Robert Pittman. And so now the next part of this is to hear arguments on whether or not to allow the restraining order. And before people say, oh, well, you know, of course, it's a right-wing judge. Pittman was appointed by Obama. Obama appointed him. This was not a Trump judge. This is not a Bush judge. This was an Obama appointee. So it seems rather ludicrous that some folks would maybe distance themselves from this by just saying, oh, of course, we expected that. I don't know how many people expected this. He's going by the book. In fact, I will say this. There was a legal analyst from CNN in one of the sentences that was given to this, instead of the wall-to-wall coverage, saying, no, this is him going by the book. His name is Steve Vladek. He said, by not issuing a temporary restraining order, he's effectively preventing Texas from asking the Court of Appeals to also block this hearing before it happens, because it could all just go down that road. So he's doing what he's supposed to do. But again, we usually get some meaningful coverage, but in this case, we didn't. We are now hearing from Clarence Thomas, of course, the Supreme Court Justice, who voted to not get involved in this particular case. And that, I do think, was the right move, given where it is right now in the state of Texas. But he talked about media in a general sense, not just around this particular case, but around all of the cases that end up getting decided by the state or by the U.S. Supreme Court. And I thought that during this sort of Q&A portion of a speech he gave, I thought it was rather instructive. I thought it was rather instructive, mostly because we generally don't hear from Clarence Thomas, but his take on how the media frames these kinds of stories is one you don't often hear.
I think the media makes it sound as though you are just always going right to your personal preference. So if they think you're anti-abortion or something personally, they think that that's the way you always will come out. They think you're for this or for that. They think you become like a politician.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a problem. I think you're gonna jeopardize any faith in the legal institutions. And I think the media and the interest groups further that.
he's 100% correct, and he went on to make a comparison between how, you know, sports fans will call out a referee who screws up a call in their view and say, oh, this is the worst. They must be getting paid by the other side. But then when they come up with a ruling on the field that you support, you're like, oh, that, you know, that's a brave, brave, qualified, incredibly heroic ref, because you liked that particular call. And I thought that that was also a really apt metaphor, apt way to talk about this. The Supreme Court is not supposed to take political sides. Now, ultimately, it sometimes seems that way. Not always, by the way, but it ultimately sometimes seems that way because, number one, deeply political issues get in front of them. Those are at least the ones that we hear about the most coming from the media. They don't really cover a lot of the issues that they don't think can be turned into really hot segments on a cable news show. Maybe they'll talk a little bit about it, but they don't do any of the deep dives. And when there is a unanimous decision or it's split up 6-3, whatever it is, they generally don't frame stories that aren't inherently political as, oh, well, the conservative block of justices voted this way and the liberal ones voted that. They don't do that, because ultimately what's supposed to happen is they're supposed to just look at the law. And it's not supposed to matter whether or not they support individual Supreme Court justices support a particular bill. It's just supposed to be about what the law says and what the law is. That's it. And that's why you've seen over the course of even just the last few years, some weird bedfellows when it comes to the rulings. You're like, Antonin Scalia voted with the left on that. Why? Why did Clarence Thomas go over with Justice Breyer? Like, where did that come? It's because they're not looking at it politically. But sometimes the way that the media frames it, Clarence Thomas is 100% correct, is upset when something doesn't go their way. They're pulling off the referee made a bad call to you position. They wanted this to be overturned because they support abortion. Most left-wing media members support abortion. And so whenever a judge gets in the way of stopping what they believe to be a scary law, well, guess what? They frame the stories against the court. And boy, is that dangerous. I think that is so incredibly dangerous. It really is when you think about it. What they're basically trying to do is dismantle the court institution, weaken this institution. They talk about it all the time on the left. We dismantle systems of oppression. Well, they view this as a issue of systemic misogyny or oppression towards women and their right to an abortion. That's how they view it. And so if they call it out and they frame things in a way that allows people to have less support of the court, that is their way, I think, of intentionally trying to dismantle that institution so then they could rebuild it. What do you think the whole idea behind court packing is? Rather than dismantle, we'll just reshape it. We'll just rebuild it by force, by changing the makeup of the actual court. It's, I think, really significant, and I don't think enough people call it out. And so kudos to Clarence Thomas, Justice Thomas, for doing just that.
The Last Rants.
Well, we're going into the weekend, and it's going to be an interesting one for a lot of folks, because this week has objectively sucked from a news perspective. Just a lot of crummy stories that are putting a lot of us, especially me, I'm just in a crummy mood because of a lot of the stories, particularly the idea of a vaccine passport, where we talked about it with Doug Erickson this hour. I think it's wrong. I'm not looking forward to that city and county life, and I'm going to, as best as I can, choose not to participate. I will violate that at some point because I do still have to have some semblance of a life. And at some point, they are going to force me into it. But until then, until I'm actually forced into it or feel forced into it, I'm not going to engage. And because I've just been kind of in a crummy mood all week, just because it's been driven by the news, I'm going to try to kind of take it easy this weekend. And that's what I want you to do. Relax this weekend. Spend time with friends and family this weekend. Disconnect as much as you can from the news this weekend, because we have a lot of fight left coming in the upcoming months for us to put out there. Political fight, I should say. Because there are a lot of bad policies that are going to be implemented by politicians who aren't listening to you. And we're going to have to get a lot more motivated and organized. So rest up. And that's the Last Rants.